And welcome back to another episode of the Cardboard Herald, my chance to talk with creative gamers and game creators. As always, I'm your host, Jack, and today joining me from the Moose Co. in Australia is Marcus Finley and Gavin Vance, the designers, developers, creators, owners, purveyors of Scofton. How you guys doing?
Hey, well, hey. Jack.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jack. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, of course.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's the end of the work week. I'm excited to talk to you guys about this Buckwild game. Like, I have so many thoughts about it. Like, I didn't even know where to begin with Scofton. Like, as soon as I saw the cover art with the beatdown police car out front and, you know, the tea bar and everything, I was like, okay, I know this place. I have been to this restaurant, and these guys, they know what's up. So we got a lot of ground to cover. I got a bunch of questions, and it doesn't just focus on this game, because I got to know about the brilliant minds behind Scofton. Like, clearly something is wrong with you guys in the best sort of ways.
Yeah, we got a few stories to tell, and that's nice to hear about your first impressions about Scofton, because that is often something that we think about. What are they going to think when they see this box? What emotions will it evoke? And the cover art is not exactly polished, especially at this stage. It's still a little bit prototypey. It's basically our vision, but there's a bit of a story behind that, and it's just interesting to us to find out how people feel when they hold this in their hands and open it up and start to dig around inside.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that just so we have some baseline understanding for the audience here, which, by the way, Scofton is a game that's on Kickstarter right now if you're listening to this when the podcast publishes, so you can go check it out. But for the audience who's not already aware of it, can you guys give like a nutshell of what this game is?
Well, like you said, it's something that basically, if you've ever been to a dodgy all-you-can-eat diner, you already know how to play this game. Essentially, it's a worker placement game set in an all-you-can-eat diner, a bad one at that. You're trying to get the best value for money whilst management are trying to slow you down and fill you up on bread. There was this great restaurant here in Australia in the 90s that everyone used to go to called Sizzler. I think it was a Californian branch that we bought at. It just was gained a lot of popularity here. And the first thing they used to do is they used to serve you this sort of cheesy bread, the Sizzler cheesy bread.
Yep.
And it was such a ploy, you'd smell this beautiful, fresh, cheesy bread and you'd gobble it down, and then, of course, half your stomach is full. Classic all-you-can-eat buffet ploy to fill you up. So that's what happens in this game too. Management are trying to slow you down. And there's a number of things you can do. I guess the nice thing about Scofton that we've received, the information that we've received from people who have played the game, is it's really interactive for a worker placement. You've got like this old cardboard box in the corner of the restaurant called the Lost and Found. And in that, there's a whole bunch of random assortment of stuff that people have left behind. And you can use those things to sort of mess with your opponents or gain special actions that you otherwise wouldn't be able to do.
I think the thing that people are going to gravitate to initially, because it's so powerful, is the theme. But there's actually a very clever and elegant worker placement system that is this cool dual-layered placement then worker resolution that is unlike most any other worker placement game that I've played. So to get to kind of like the nuts and bolts here, when did that come about, when you made that divide between occupying spaces and then fully separately deciding the order in which you're going to resolve them?
Well, I guess the way that Gavin and I work is Gav comes up with the concept, the idea, the theme, and then I usually go away and try and work out how do I make a game that fits with Gav's mind.
Yeah, so it usually starts with a name. It often starts with a name. And a basic idea. I have pretty strong ideas of how I think games should look and what should be going on in them. Marcus is perhaps a little stronger on balancing things out and working out some mechanics and mathematics and things like that. But yeah, what you're actually referring to with the workers going out and then you being able to actually decide on the fly the order that they come back and resolve their actions, is actually perhaps without intending to be, it is actually one of the most sort of powerful core mechanics of Scoffton. And that would be down to Marcus developing that. I don't even really know how you did that or how it came about. It just sort of, it happened. I mean, bear in mind, all of this was being done on like a piece of cardboard that was torn from the side of a cardboard box, and we were just slowly working this stuff out. I mean, the very early prototypes are very rough.
Well, I mean, basically, I feel like this game wrote itself. I mean, Gav said, like, it's an all-you-can-eat diner, you know? There's a claw machine in the corner. There's, like, you've got your own dessert belly. Management are there, and they're trying to slow you down. As soon as Gav sort of gave me these ideas, I was like, well, worker placement's going to be perfect for an all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, you go and grab the best stuff from the buffet. So as soon as I was trying to squeeze all to get all of these sort of humorous ideas that Gav had into some sort of system that flowed, it was actually the first kind of sort of mechanics we had, really. Yeah, it was like you go to the buffet, you wait there until management does something to you, and then you resolve your actions, your worker actions.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, there used to be money in the game originally. I mean, we had this crazy system that we really, it was all about taking stuff out of the game. I mean, early games of Scoffton took about 3 hours to play.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you had money and you had all this totally unnecessary stuff, and it was a whole process of just paring that right back and just, stripping it down to the essentially what makes the game fun, which I guess is a process that most people go through when they design a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's so fascinating about that system to me is that not only is it a brilliant system that as soon as I played it, I was like, oh, geez, why aren't other worker placement games doing like this is efficient, but it's also giving you a lot more agency, and it makes it so you approach the kind of desperation of grabbing these spots in a different way than you normally do in a worker placement game, because you know that later on you'll have the freedom of resolution, though that may come with interference through any number of means. But not only that, more than anything, it's so thematic to that sort of desperation that a garbage human being like myself might feel in a all-you-can-eat buffet, where you're like, oh, I have to go get it all. Like, I need to stack it all on my plate. And then I get back to the table, and then it's like, okay, now I can tackle this in whatever decadent order that I, as the king of this plate, will so choose to do. That really is something that's impressive, that I think anyone that plays Scoffton is going to realize this is a really fresh take on worker placement, and bonus that it's immersive.
One of the funny things, I guess, with play testing this is often people that play Scoffton play it as if they are actually in an all-you-can-eat buffet. There's people that just go straight for dessert. They're like, that's the dessert bar, I'm going there. My son, when he plays it, he always goes for chips. I mean, they're low value, but he's like, why are you going for chips? There's a lobster on these. I like chips. It's just funny seeing people, they basically attack this game as if it were a genuine all-you-can-eat restaurant, which is really nice to see.
It's amazing that it is so incredibly thematic. Like, it is immersive, and the theme is resonant throughout the entire thing. Like, I want to know the genesis behind the singular and ultimately super risky poisonous prawn. Like, when did that come in?
Was that your idea?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, it's hard to remember. I mean, the development up to this point to get it onto Kickstarter is going back about 2 years. So some stuff is lost in the haze. The poison prawn was in there very, very early on. And initially, it used to be much more devastating. I mean, you could not really recover from a poison prawn attack. If you ended up with it, it was basically your entire contents of your stomach were cleaned out, and there was no way to really get back into the game. We had to adjust that. So there was a bit of a compromise reached where half your stomach contents get cleaned out, and it allowed people to at least kind of hang in there and stay in the game. But the poison prawn to me was an instant thematic addition that basically just came with the territory. You know, you know, people think of all you can eat restaurants, you think of giant mounds of seafood, and some of that seafood maybe isn't as fresh as perhaps health regulations would require. It might have been sitting around for a while. So yeah, it was just one of those things. It was an instant gag. I mean, I like gags in games, and that was a really obvious one to me. It was just it came basically with the game, with the name. It had to have some element of risk of salmonella poisoning had to occur.
Clearly, I love the game, and that's something that I think it locked into a sense of humor, a sort of sarcasm, a little bit of cynicism that I have. It's very dry, yet also over the top in a lot of ways. But I don't know that that is everyone's cup of tea. So, like, when you guys were thinking about creating your flagship product, the premiere of Vamoosco, why Scoffden? Like, did you have other options available? Or are you guys constantly working on other designs? You know, why this game?
How long have you got? okay, well, where do we start? Without going into too crazy detail.
We go back about 10 years.
Yeah, Marcus and I designed our first game in 2007. We started thereabouts. And that is a game about beavers. It is a game that is actually our flagship game that we would love to see published one day. And we, in order to get that game published, we decided we needed to figure out how to do this with something a little more lightweight. So we actually originally came up with the idea for a game about bears fighting salmon in a river called Run, Salmon, Run. And we mucked around with that for a while, and then we discovered there already is a game called Salmon Run out there. And interestingly enough, there is another one coming very soon, I believe, yeah. Another game about salmon fighting bears in a river. So that really wasn't quite working, and we just thought, well, we just shelved it. And then, I mean, it must have been a couple of weeks later or something. I just thought, all-you-can-eat restaurants, yeah. Worker placement, Scoffden, the name came, the theme came. And we ran with it.
And it just wrote itself.
Yeah, the game wrote itself. We didn't know what to do about the art. Now, the art is, I guess, divisive for some people. I mean, we've had people look at it and say, look, you're never going to sell this game. The art just doesn't do it for anybody. But we were trying to figure out what to do about the art, and we were thinking, do we know artists? Can we get an artist in? Are we willing to spend, you know, $5,000 on art, or what are we doing? And we had a half decent prototype at that stage that was all kind of printed and glued up, and it was looking okay as a prototype. And my wife Nan, one day, just she came across us in the kitchen just talking about this, and she just sat down and said, you know what? This is the game. You should put the game out like this. And after we were done laughing uproariously, we thought about it, and we thought, you know what? That's actually probably the best course of action.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine the game not looking the way that it does. Like, it mirrors the humor so perfectly. I think I may have mentioned this a few times online, but to me, it looks like a late 90s, early 2000s adult cartoon come to life, you know, a real dry humor, late night adult cartoon that is just sarcastic as all get out, kind of crappy artwork. Like, that's unfair for me to say. Like, it is very good, bad artwork, in the sense that you go to a buffet like this to have very good, bad food.
Yeah, can I interject here? That period of time would have been about the last time Marcus actually picked up a pen. So you're absolutely correct in your assumptions about, you know, I mean, you know, we're the guys who grew up, came of age in the 90s, and we came of age with The Simpsons and all of that kind of stuff. And that, yeah, there's a level of cynicism involved in a lot of that material. And, I mean, Marcus, to his credit, had to learn how to use Photoshop, how to use a drawing tablet and stylus, and just all this incredible stuff, because we started from a very, very low base. You know, we don't have a lot of graphic design skills. We brought in a sort of a guy we met called Jonathan Kalea, who was, you know, basically looking to do some art direction type stuff and get some experience. So he's kind of in there doing it with us for a, you know, a cut of the Kickstarter style of thing. So without him, I'm not sure how far we would have got. But yeah, I mean, Marcus has basically worked really hard to get something down that, you know, is presentable. And
right.
We're really happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cohesive aesthetic, like, throughout. It evokes something very clear. And the best thing that I could say about it is it reminds me of punk rock album covers, you know, from the late 70s, early 80s. It totally feels like something that would be on a fanzine, on an album cover, you know, or sketched onto a talented kid's binder when they were too bored to listen in their math class. You know, this is the result of them just trying to poke fun at Americana or Australiacana. I'm not sure the logistics there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that comment. That's, I mean, we have that punk DIY aesthetic to what we're doing, and we have that attitude. I mean, I was very clear when I sort of really started getting into Twitter and building up sort of friendship groups on there, I was very open about the fact that I didn't know what I was doing, and I wear that almost as a badge of honor that I'm learning all this as I go and growing into it. And you know, it's, I guess it's kind of honest in some respect, but yeah, it is more of a punk DIY aesthetic and attitude towards things. And we know that people look at this game and just, you know, they want minis, they want really fancy art, and they're just not going to get that from us. And it just, it discombobulates people because they can't figure out how this could maybe be released, I think. We've had comments like that, you know, so, yeah.
But on the other hand, we've got our lovers as well.
Sure. Yeah,
we've got our disses, but we've got people that really embraced it, embraced the artwork, and they're really quite taken by it. Yeah. And it does look so different to other games. I think that's a really great thing. It's a really powerful, you know, place to be in, that we can stand out so much on a shelf full of games. And you can see Scofton and it really just pops out because it does look so different to everything else that's kind of coming out.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing to see how different the reaction can be. And just one example, a couple of weeks ago we were at PAX Australia. And we were there as part of what's called the Tabletop Game Designers Australia booth, and we had a bunch of slots where we're just standing there at a table with Scofton, and the amount of people that were drawn to it and was just unbelievably good. And that was when we knew, so, okay, we got to do this now. We've got to jump on this and get it happening, because it's like there's a vibe going on with it.
So going back to the whole punk rock analogy here, if you, say, didn't fund, would you even consider revamping this game with newer, fresher, much more higher quality, quote-unquote, artwork? Or would you feel like a total sellout if you did that, like a disservice to the game?
I think Gavin and I have both kind of come to really embrace the look of it and how it looks. Yeah. And we were sort of talking about this the other night. You know, at the moment we're almost a third funded, which is not too bad.
Yeah, funded.
But you know, that's, we're not sure because it has petered out quite a bit. Yeah. So
we're in the mid period slump, which is understandable. But we did start well. We surprised ourselves.
Yeah. So we were sort of contemplating, what do we do if we don't fund? And without redoing the art has never been considered an option.
I think we would just have to go back and work harder at, you know, building up the momentum. The art is the art. Now, originally, this was going to be a sort of weird edition of Scofton that was going to be called the Dumpster Edition. And we did think, oh, we'll do this limited print run, and one day maybe we can get the art revamped. But you know what? I just don't think it really lends itself to that. It would just be too weird to do to what the game is now. I mean, you know, you never know what might happen. I mean, if the game funds and it goes into retail and it's doing okay and goes out of print, and a couple of years later someone comes along and says, hey, we want to make another edition of this game. I mean, sure, we'd be open to talking about that. But, yeah, there'd be a real fine line between the feelings that we have about the way the art is at the moment, and really just, you know, revamping it to a point where it's unrecognizable.
How are you guys dealing with the criticism? I mean, you mentioned that it's divisive, and there are as many people who are really excited and really embracing the artwork. There's got to be lots of people who are like, yo, your game is garbage, and there's no way that I would ever even touch this game with a 10-foot pole looking like that. And how do you guys deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
It's not day-to-day. Come on, man.
Well, I mean, the comments exist. You can see them. They probably are the ones that stick the most in your mind. You know, I know that I can get 10 compliments on something that I'm doing, people saying, hey, you're doing something really great. And then one person just really lays into me, and that thing will be in the forefront of like the next 5 creative projects that I do. And I'm like, oh, that dude, you know, he had to say something. How do you guys deal with it?
Yeah, look, I don't think we engage too much with it. I mean, if someone's really up in our grill, then yeah, sure, we can just say, well, you know, this is the game, you know, and if you don't like the game, then there are lots of other games that might be more to your taste. I mean, we know that there's an audience for this game, and we're out there pushing to find that audience. And, you know, that's sort of where we're going with it. I try not to let this stuff get to me too much. I sometimes vent a little bit, but, you know, one of the things that I did find quite amusing was there were a couple of people who initially saw the Kickstarter page, and they watched the video, and they're kind of like, oh, you know, why is the video so sad? and I'm really, you know, it's like, what, you know, have you had a total humor bypass? Like, you know, it's like they hear this sad royalty-free piano music and they think, oh, the video is so sad. And it's like, the video is funny. There's nothing sad about the video. I just, you know, that really bamboozled me, and I thought about that quite hard, and then I just thought, you know, like, there's going to be people out there that don't get this stuff.
Yeah,
so what can you do?
That's pretty much how I sort of take it, you know. As I mean, I understand that I have limited artistic abilities, so I don't let the comments get too much to me. But it's basically, I take it in, like, people, they just don't get the joke, I guess, you know. If people aren't into it, it's the humor's not up their alley, or they just don't get it. And that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
That's all right. So that, it's not really I don't take it to heart.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, we need to remember there's a, you know, generation of people, I guess, coming along behind us who don't maybe have that kind of inherent understanding of 90s cynicism and 80s type stuff, and yeah, I don't know, uncharted territory, I guess.
That's the classic punk rock retort too. You just don't get it, man. Mom and dad, you just don't get it. You guys seem like such a dynamic duo. How did you guys meet, and why did you end up going into business together?
When did we meet? I mean, we've been friends since about 2001 or so.
Yeah, we met through your wife.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We met through your wife. You know, it would have been early 20s. Hanging around, you know.
I went to uni with Gav's wife.
Yeah, with my wife Nan, and then
you started dating her, and then that's how we met, basically.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I guess similar interests. You know, all living in houses together. All into music, going out to see bands and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. Okay. Stop. What is like one concert from the time that you will remember forever?
Did we go to Mogwai together at the
Prince of Wales? Oh man, Mogwai! Are you
was that you and me? Oh, I can't remember. I don't know. When we're talking concerts, we're talking like gigs with like 20 people at them, you know.
I used to play gigs with 20 people at them, and I would be thrilled at the audience turnout.
I hope to play more gigs with 20 people at them in the not too distant future. But yeah, I mean, yeah, bands, music, drinking, hanging out, having a good time. And then sometime in the mid-2000s, Marcus bought, and this is going to be a huge surprise to you, a game called Settlers of Catan.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Unbelievable, right? So we played Settlers of Catan, and, you know, like, I mean, look, I'm quite upfront in the fact that I'm not a massive game head. Like, I don't play loads and loads of games. I don't need to play every new game that comes out. But Settlers of Catan was cool. It was an eye-opener. I was like, oh, this is an interesting take on games, because, you know, I hadn't played a board game for many, many years, and it never really occurred to me to really play games. But Marcus got quite into games, and together we just sort of started, you know, buying a few of these, what I guess are called new classics, you know, Carcassonne, and I think you got right into Power Grid really quickly and all that sort of stuff. But there's no, you know, we're not like the guys with the skills to make the business and make all this happen. We need to kind of learn that as we go. But somewhere around 2007, and we have photos of this, so there's photographic evidence of us doing this. Around about 2007, Marcus and I were basically living very close to each other.
Yeah, right.
And one day, I guess we'd probably been drinking, and I opened my mouth and said, you know what, there really needs to be a game called Damn Beavers. And
I said, yes, there does need to be a game called Damn Beavers, and we're going to make it right now.
Absolutely. Well, anyway.
The scissors out, cardboard.
There's photos of us there, sitting there pretty much that night or the next night, raiding the Carcassonne box, cutting bits of paper up and trying to figure out how you would make a game about beavers fighting for resources in the wilds of the Canadian wildlands. So this game...
Are there beavers in Alaska?
Okay, so I had to ask about this. We can take this as a tangent here, because you've brought up beavers, you brought up salmon, you brought up bears, and your logo has a moose in it. Like, these are all the indigenous animals in my backyard. Like, what is your obsession with these, like, North American Arctic animals?
Okay, right. Well, we can explain the moose. So the moose is simply there because our name is The Moose Co. And it's got moose in the name, so we're like, well, it's got to be a moose. There's really no logic behind it. But the logic behind the name is that during the process of really trying to get Damn Beavers picked up by a publisher, we were told to vamoose about between 60 and 70 times by various publishers. So this is our choice of name to basically say we've had to go out here and do it on our own. And the moose is the name. So, yeah, that explains the moose. The beavers was simply just came from the name Damn Beavers, and we created this game about beavers. And, yeah, salmon and bear, I mean, that was just another weird thing that came out of my brain.
Gav starts with a name. You always start with a name. Yeah, so, you know, puns like Run Salmon Run, Damn Beavers. I mean, he always starts with a name. And so I guess that's the origin.
To me, a name is a very important part of a game. So,
but all those early games, though, I was probably a little bit influenced by my obsession with David Attenborough.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a science nerd and a nature nerd, particularly. Mm-hmm. And so, Damn Beavers itself, we were like, when Gav said there needs to be a game called Damn Beavers, I was right on that. I was like, right, there's a wolverine.
Yeah.
It's the natural predator of the, of the beaver. It basically became like David Attenborough meets Settlers of Catan.
What if there was a game about competitively making the best wildlife documentary and all the shenanigans, going too far in order to get the perfect shot and getting into very, very dangerous situations, self-sacrificing so that way you could have this very prestigious, the Planet Earth 3, whatever it is, you know?
Okay.
As far as the animal thing, the ironic thing is that here in Alaska, our local gaming convention is called Platypus Con, and I don't think a platypus has ever set foot in Alaska, so, you know, I think it's somehow fitting. We did like a trade during draft season or something.
Yeah, well, we'll try and bring you a platypus, Jack, if we ever get over there.
I would love to see customs or whoever else it is, having to go through all of the citation work in order to figure out what's going on with this smuggled platypus.
Yeah. Can you get us a moose is the next question.
You know, I don't know if I can pallet ship a moose. That might be a little bit difficult. They are quite big, bigger than you think. So we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
Okay.
If you can get the platypus here, I'm sure we can make some back alley deals.
Very good. Yeah, well, we'll certainly have to think about your idea, though. Like, that sounds very interesting about, Yeah, games about all of our games, apart from Scofton, I suppose, seem to be about animals and about nature. And
Scofton is about human nature.
It is about human nature.
The human in its natural habitat of a very bunk ass buffet.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, look, so that we're in slight conclusion of that story. I mean, Dam Beavers is a game that we have been working on for 10 years, and we would love to see it published one day. And getting Scofton out there is part of that process, is part of the plan, part of a long-term plan to actually see that happen.
So, yeah, so believe it or not, this game, Scofton, this is our simple game. This is our not too many components, simple game that we wanted to make to sort of get ourselves out there.
What was the biggest challenge in designing this game, getting it to the point where you're at right now, and what was really the solution to that challenge?
Probably the challenges don't necessarily revolve around design. They revolve around stepping into the unknown with regards to getting the game manufactured, getting the game shipped all over the world, learning what Kickstarter is all about and how to, you know, drum up interest. That's all the stuff that I guess isn't necessarily in our natural wheelhouse. So, the design of the game, you know, pretty straightforward, just, you know, it came together. As Marcus has said, it basically wrote itself. It's been heavily refined. But all that extraneous stuff towards it's the nitty gritty of the business side of things. That's what sort of scared us off a little. And, you know, really, I think you just have to take the bull by the horns and you jump in there. And when problems arise, you figure out how to fix them one at a time. And that's really just, you know, probably the most sensible approach to it.
Building an audience is another big challenge, especially for us here in Australia. You know, we are so far away from everywhere else, and we can't really afford to be flying over to Essen or to some of the bigger conventions in, you know, in North America.
Yeah.
So building an audience from this part of the world is a bit challenging, especially when the games we make aren't really easily print and playable. You know, there's too many stuff. You can't print and play Scofton. It's just there's too many bits. It take, I don't know how many trips to office.
It's too difficult to print and play. Now, in conjunction with that, here in Australia, I mean, when we take Scofton to conventions, it does really well and it garners a lot of interest, but we just don't have a lot of conventions here. We've got a few, but it's not like in the States where there's, you know, there's a giant one every 3 weeks or so. Like, we just don't really have that. We've got PAX is really big. We've got one called MeepleCon that's coming up. It comes up in December here in Melbourne. There's a big one in January called CanCon in Canberra. And there's a few scattered around, but, you know, most of them are attracting 100 people, 150 people or so. They're, you know, other than PAX, which is a giant showstopper because everyone's there for the video game stuff. Mm-hmm. We just don't really have that culture of giant board game conventions, which it just doesn't really happen here.
It's growing.
So it's a challenge. Yeah, it's growing. It's definitely growing. I guess it's a population thing. And, you know, it's hard work putting on these conventions. We know people who do it. And, they work their butts off to get these things happening. And hopefully they can continue because it's great for people like us who want to turn up and sit at a table all weekend with our game and just pull people in and get them to play. It works well.
What about the logistical concerns? You may have touched on this a little bit, but the logistical concerns of actually manufacturing the game, which I imagine is going to happen somewhere like in China, and then you would have that distributed around the world. Have you guys really nailed down exactly what that's going to look like, or is that what you're going to focus on after the campaign ends?
That's sort of my area of interest. We have a plan, and basically, the game will be manufactured in Shanghai, and then, you know, it's going to go through the usual fulfillment channels to, you know, get some of it basically into Europe for European friendly shipping, get some of it into Canada for Canada friendly shipping, a large bulk into America, although it is my understanding that America does not charge duties on import of board games. And basically whatever's left over will come back here to Australia. And that will involve many trips by me to the post office because I'm going to do all that stuff myself.
Oh, fun. All the boxes hanging out in your garage, loading them up, doing some shipping.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I'm no stranger to doing that sort of stuff. I've been involved in manufacturing projects before, and I've done a lot of this sort of stuff. So the opening it up to a really global market, that's a bit of a challenge, but it's not insurmountable. And like I said, you just, when something comes up, you figure out how to fix it and you just, you know, you go from there. It's there's loads of people doing this stuff. It's, you know, it's not impossible.
Well, as of today, there are 23 days left in the campaign. So how are you guys like feeling about it right at the moment? And what are the next steps that you're planning on taking beyond going on one of the premier podcasts on the internet?
Oh, you mean we have to do something else? Jack, this is it. This is our only My God. We do have a few other things going on, I guess. We've got so there's a few board game cafes in around town and a few game shops that in the upcoming weeks I'll be going to run a few evenings. So once again, it is this challenge of, you know, getting it in front of an audience. Most of our backers at the moment are from Melbourne because they've actually seen the game. So I guess we're just going to keep on hitting up social media and keep bombarding people. You know, it is that sort of unfortunate thing where you have to be spruiking a game, you know. That's not really Gavin and my sort of normal shtick, but unless we do that, we're just not going to get faces, you know, on the page. And if we don't get faces on the page, then it's not going to convert to backers. But
and MeeplCon.
Yeah, so we do have a big actually really nice timing is the last weekend just before the campaign finishes, we've got MeeplCon, which is, as Gavin mentioned, one of the bigger board game conventions within Melbourne, and that happens the last weekend of the campaign. So we'll be there that weekend. We'll be there working hard.
Trying to get
some backers.
We'll be chained to a table.
After PAX. We had so many people with interest, you know, because they see it and they go, wow, what is this game? This looks great. This is really funny. So it's just trying to get more people to see it.
I guess I should mention up front that you guys paid for me to do a preview of the game. And as a testimony to the game itself, I reached out to you afterwards. Like after all obligations were done there, I was like, yo, I just want to talk to you guys about this game because I got to know who's creating this. I got to know the history behind this. It became a minor obsession, both for my wife and I, and she was so excited. Like, oh, are you talking to these guys? Are you going to have them on the show? You got to ask them about, like, what inspired the restaurant. Like, clearly they have been to this restaurant before. There are very particular things, you know, like... I believe in this game. I hope that it funds, and I think that it has strategic chops that are worth considering just as a purely mechanical thing. I think it's legitimately funny, and it's a fresh theme. But I also want to know, like, what is the game plan in the event that it doesn't? You know, we kind of talked earlier about how you wouldn't consider changing up the art, but... You know, what are the next steps for Scoffed in the event that it's just not enough right now? Are you taking another crack at it, building that momentum that you were talking about? Are you going to put it to the side and work on something else? Do you guys even want to think about that as a reality, or is it purely believe in the project right now and don't even consider the alternative?
Probably a bit of all of that, I think. look, the campaign is... tracking okay. I think with a bit of hard work we can get this across the line. If it doesn't, we'd be crazy not to have another crack at it, maybe a couple of months down the track, with a bit more work going into the, you know, building up the market. Beyond that, I don't know, we'd really have to think about it. I mean, we've poured our heart and soul into this for the last 12 to 18 months or so, and we really feel like we've given it our all, for sort of the base that we're coming up from, And you know, we're trying really hard, so we're hopeful that it's going to fund and it's going to, people are going to come through with the goods. We just got to, yeah, work hard, get it out there. Every backer counts. Every time we get one more backer, it's just happy days for us, because we know that at least it's having some traction on a day-to-day basis and it's not simply languishing. So yeah, well, I mean, I guess we need to talk about this more deeply at some point, Marcus, but what are we going to do if it doesn't fund, huh?
I don't know. I guess at the moment, Jack, we're just trying to be optimistic, you know.
Right.
We're in the midst of this campaign, so we just want to try and push as much as we can and focus our energies on that. If it's unsuccessful, we'll cross that bridge and see what the next step is then. But I imagine we'd probably have another crack at it. Because we have had such good feedback from the people that have actually seen it and played it. You know, it's been really well received everywhere we've sort of shown it. So yeah,
absolutely,
we definitely have some fans. We've definitely established some people, you know, that really really dig it and want to support us and want to see it become a reality. So that's always a good sign, right?
Yeah.
At least one all the way across the world in Alaska, for sure.
Yeah, well, I was going to add, Jack, that, you know, the stories you're hearing today, you're like the first person to get that out of us. So this is really the first time anyone has ever taken an interest in what we do in terms of wanting to interview us and hear kind of where we've come from and, you know, what our plans are. So I hesitate to use the term scoop, but you're basically the first person to really take an interest in that regard and get this story. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, I think it's an important story, and it's something that I really try to hone in on with this podcast, is to talk to people from all different backgrounds who are approaching games in different ways. And honestly, I think this moment, the myriad of feelings that you must be having as kind of like your debut game, especially as people who have been friends for so long, depended upon one another for so long, and are now business partners and just trying to bootstrap this game into existence, this is a compelling story. And capturing it at this moment on the precipice of the ending of the story, you know, we can talk a year from now about other projects that you're working on, or where this goes from here, or whether it was a success, or whether it was something you had to come back to. But capturing what you're feeling in the middle of the campaign, I think is worthy, and it's of interest to a lot of people, especially because in the tabletop gaming space, a huge sum of the people listening to podcasts like this are aspiring designers, and if not designers, they're creative people of other types that like hearing these stories. And it's good to hear from people who, you know, are just getting their start and figuring out how to do things themselves. It's not some major company that has the funds to hire professional artists and are going to be recruiting for developers to come on board. Like, this is a really important story. And plus, I know virtually nothing about the Australian gaming scene, so I'm learning a lot right now.
That's good. Yeah, no, that's kind words. Interesting that you mentioned that, because in conjunction with that attitude, I would say to anyone listening who is an aspiring designer, don't be afraid to reach out to people. That's one thing I've found that has really worked and been really important is, like, those people on the internet that you don't really know or anything, like, talk to them, reach out to them. They're happy to hear from you. And, you know, the worst they can do is ignore you or say no to something, but that's very rare that they do so. So I think it's really important that, yeah, you just jump right in and just go for it, because it's really all you can do.
You guys have such a such a relatable perspective to me, which is also a perspective that I don't often find out there, you know. And again, I think that's why I lock in so much with the humor of Scofton, your guys' personality, your sarcasm with one another. And I think it's worth asking this question, just kind of as an insider, someone in the middle of it right now. you know, Kickstarter is such a well-tread territory when it comes to board games, and there's such a wealth of media out there about hitting certain metrics and certain numbers that you're supposed to hit each day, how you lay out your campaign, all sorts of benchmarks and both public and private company decisions that have to be done in certain orders. Do you think that some of this real brass tacks analysis kind of undermines the intended purity of crowdfunding at all? I mean, like, to me, the anti-disestablishmentarianist or punk rock kid is like, you know what, forget all your metrics, forget all your analysis. I guess it's important stuff to have, but also it somehow takes away the heart and soul of the thing to me.
Yeah, I think someone dubbed Kickstarter, and it's not Kickstarter anymore, now it's Kick Finisher, you know. I guess we've, I feel like you're right, like this obsession with data and this obsession with, you know, doing everything right. I mean, you know, it's like people have to become like entire sort of advertising executives in order to sort of work out how they're going to get a board game made. Yeah, I think you're right. It does seem to be, and there seems to be more focus on a Kickstarter. Like I know I've seen designer threads, you know, on Twitter where people are saying, at what point do you start thinking about Kickstarter when you're designing a game? My attitude to that is you really shouldn't be thinking about that at all. I mean, that's not the point of, yeah. is that the point of making a game? Like, the point of making a game is that you're making something that people can have fun with and, you know, sit around a table with one another and be social and have a laugh and, you know, have a good time. That's the point, you know. What, yeah, I feel like it is become a bit of a machine, a bit of a marketing machine.
Yeah, it's pre-orders, takes pre-orders, yeah. And totally finished product. We are we're making it up as we go along, you know, and we're not afraid to say so. Like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and it's what Kickstarter was for.
Yeah,
it's what Kickstarter was for, and we're doing it old school, and you know, all we can do is kind of hang on by the skin of our teeth and just see where it takes us. So
well, where do you want it to take you? Like, let's say Scofton gets funded, you guys produce it. Are you currently hoping that this is going to be like a viable career down the road? Is this just a hobby that you're going to want to continue making games? Is this purely to get you the capital so you can make your Beaver game finally? You know, what is the hope?
Well, Gavin and I have both, I mean, we've both worked in creative fields before, and it never pays. This stuff doesn't pay. It's, you know, when people say, I'm a writer, or I'm a musician, or I'm a board game designer. No, right. You're a person with a hobby. That's what you are. You're a person with a hobby.
There's always a day job.
Yeah, there's always a day job. We're certainly not doing this for the money. We're doing this because it's something that we really love doing. You know, we are both creatives, yeah. I guess you'd say. And so, you know, it's just nice to have something to do outside your day job that gives you pleasure, and you know that you can hopefully, you know.
Yeah. Having said
that. Create something that other people enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, having said that, I don't think game design and production for us is ever, going to, you know, go to such dizzying heights that we're, you know, hiring a warehouse somewhere and shipping games all over the world. I don't think that's going to happen. But it's a pretty crazy hobby to have, designing games and then trying to ship them to hundreds of people all over the place. And it's fun, it's exhilarating, it's challenging, and you learn a whole bunch of skills that can be applied in, you know, all sorts of areas of your life. So we definitely would like to continue, but I would say that, you know, we've worked extraordinarily hard over the last 12 to 18 months to really bring this to where it is at the moment. And I think post Kickstarter and leading up to fulfillment, etc., we're going to need a little bit of a break and just to chill out a bit, decompress, figure out what we want to do. We have always had the intention that Dan Beavers is going to be coming along at some point. But at this point, I don't know what form that might take. I mean, you know, we might, if we can successfully design and deliver Scofton, we might try to take Dan Beavers somewhere else down the track, you know, get someone else to do some of those hard yards with it. Yeah, we'll have to have a think about that. But there's definitely more game ideas floating around in my head, certainly names and themes. So I don't know about mechanics. But, yeah, there's things going on. There's a few games about animals around. So, yeah,
There's a vague Scofton 2
concept. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
There's a whole Scofton universe, actually. There is a whole Scofton universe, which is basically a mall. And there's multiple different businesses that operate inside this mall, and every single one of them is a game. So, yeah, we could spend the rest of our lives building this universe all around Scofton, but... yeah, without giving too much away, Scofton 2, if it ever sees the light of day, would be more focused on what the staff are doing, perhaps, rather than what the customers are doing.
The Scofton Initiative. You're going to have all the individual games and how they wrap together in this cinematic shared universe. It's going to be beautiful. I love it. I love it.
Well, absolutely.
The thing that is the best thing about Scofton to me, again, is how it nails that humor. Like, as I said, I think it's a really good playing game. You know, it has a lot of fresh ideas, but there are so few legitimately funny games out there that make me laugh, that feel purposeful and trying to evoke something and trying to tell a story, but it captures humor that is typically reserved for published media in other regards, television, stand-up comedy, whatever it is, music. You guys imbue so much personality into this game. So I want to end with, like, what is the thing about Scofton that makes each of you laugh?
For me, I think as soon as you asked that question, it evoked all the memories I've had of the play testing process where people have done things usually involving the lost and found, often involving the lazy Susan, but have left an entire table of people in absolute hysterics. And that to me is a great sign. It's a sign of success. It's what I want to see. And, you know, people laughing at your game and how it makes them feel, that has been really gratifying for me. That's probably... because when I think about that, I myself laugh. So I find that, you know, I find that memory quite humorous. And I think back to some of those times and, you know, that's that game really works and it makes people laugh. It's interesting that you say that there's not a lot of humor in games. And why is that? That's sad to me, you know, that humor and games should really go together quite clearly. So, yeah, that's something for me. I love seeing people laugh. And when they're laughing at our game, it makes me very happy.
There's lots of things that do make me chuckle. I was playing it last weekend with my son. I was trying to get some games to the table and he insisted on playing Scofton. I was trying to play something else. I was like, come on, man, play anything else. He's like, no, let's play Scofton. But there's something really, it made me laugh a lot, was he wanted a piece of bread. He wanted some bread. He was trying to make the Club Royale.
Yeah.
So he had two lobsters and he wanted some bread. So he went in to collect some bread, but then, he'd also gone to the claw machine. And he drew from the claw machine a piece of bread. And the bread waiter came. And then I'd lazy Susaned him and stolen a coffee and given him bread. So suddenly his table was full of bread. And he still had his dude to bring back with more bread.
Yeah. Unpredictable.
It's just funny when, you know, if a few chain of events occur that really something quite surprising happens that, you know, makes you laugh.
Yeah. Well, for me, it is that prawn, and the ultimate resolution of the prawn is that, you know, you are having to spend a meeple's turn on the restroom tile, and that is exactly right next to the kitchen itself. And there's something so unstated but clear of exactly what this restaurant is, where the bathroom and the kitchen is in the exact same area, and what is happening.
The only few people who have picked that visual gag. Yeah, that's awesome. It's so good.
That was definitely deliberate. Yeah, we definitely had the they were through the same doors.
In an early prototype, I think there was some pipes going from the toilet back to the kitchen. We were we took them out. Yeah, we made it a little less subtle. But,
All right. Well, for everyone at home, Scoffden is now on Kickstarter. If you're listening to this when it's published, and I'm telling you, check it out. If you want, you can go onto the Cardboard Herald's video channel, and we have a preview of Scoffden that's up. I get into all of the things I think are so cool about the game, mechanically, thematically. And it is 100% honest. Like, I just think this is one of the most original games that I've played in a long time. And so, Marcus and Gavin, where can people find you on the internet to learn more about Scoffden?
Well, they can find Vamoosco at vamoosco.com, which is just VAMOOSECO. They can find me on Twitter at @the_prototyper. And they can find Marcus on Twitter at Spudhole.
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 That's perfect.
So, yeah, that's sort of, you know, you can make contact with us. You can ask us questions. You can look up Scoffden on Kickstarter and you can go check it out. And we'd love you to do that. We'd absolutely love to see this game fund. And, yeah, we think we've got a good game. And, yeah, we're pretty hyped about getting it out there.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on to the show so much, and I wish you the best of luck with the rest of the campaign.
Thanks so much, Jack.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jack. Yeah, we'll talk to you again sometime.
Definitely. Thank you for listening to the Cardboard Herald. As always, everything we do is ad-free and audience-supported. If you'd like to help keep it that way, find the Patreon link at the top of our webpage, cardboardherald.com. We have several levels of support with various rewards. If you enjoyed the show, we do a whole bunch of other stuff, including reviews, interviews, and recommendations across writing, podcasts, and video. You can find that on our YouTube channel or by visiting any of our social media or our website. So with that out of the way, thank you again for listening to the Cardboard Herald.